Hello, welcome back to My Mate Bought a Toaster. This show is brought to you by Hot UK Deals. Guess what? We've got a competition with them as well. I know. Not only are you winning by listening to brand new My Mate Bought a Toaster, coming up any second now, you can also be winning some actual physical prizes. Your love for this show is about to be made physically manifested by this stuff. It's very exciting. All thanks to Hot UK Deals. Such a good platform. There's a great app. Check it out, Hot UK Deals. The concept is really simple. It's basically loads of people sharing the best deals for stuff. That's it. That's it. Imagine Twitter, but every tweet is someone telling you where they found a really good discount or deal. And you can jump into your silo, whatever you're looking for, whether it's a gadget or golf or whatever you're after, you will find it on Hot UK Deals. It's really good. And I'll be honest, quite Moorish. It's a community of over 2 million people searching for deals for you. Join this and you've got 2 million people working for you. It's like you've got loads of shopping PAs. That's how I like to think of it. But then, as established on this show, I've got a bit of an ego problem. Anyway, we're running a fabulous competition this series with Hot UK Deals. Each week, I'm going to be giving away some of their most popular deals from the last year. First up this week for episode one, some Apple AirPods. That's right. You can win some Apple AirPods to listen to My Mate Bought a Toaster on.
Hooray.
Here's how you do it. It's dead easy. All you got to do is get on the socials medias, you know the ones, and follow three different accounts. Are you listening? Hot UK Deals on Insta. They're just Hot UK Deals. Follow us, ToasterPod on Insta. And follow ToasterPod on TikTok. We're ToasterPod on TikTok as well. Do all three of those, and we're going to pick someone who has done all three of those, and they will be our winner of some lush Apple AirPods. We're going to do it every single week. There'll be different missions for you every single week. The prizes are great. You've got a good chance of winning. Let's be honest. This podcast doesn't have 10 million listeners. You've got a great chance. This is all thanks to Hot UK Deals, who are partnering up with My Mate Bought a Toaster this series. Talking of My Mate Bought a Toaster, shall we?
Oh, when I need a laugh, there's a helping people. Tom Fox talking to these funny people. He's asking what they find in the town stories. Can somebody yell out the name of the show, please? It's My Mate Bought a Toaster. Oh, it's My Mate Bought a Toaster. Yeah, yeah, it's My Mate Bought a Toaster. Toaster for my love.
Hello, welcome back to My Mate Bought a Toaster. I, every now and again, manage to bag a guest who is very of the moment. A man who... listen, Keith Brimer-Jones. A lot of my TV-watching pals love you, including me, and are talking about you loads at the moment. Star of the Great Pottery Throwdown. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
A pleasure.
It is great to meet you, and also looking fantastic. The Red Sox, man.
Always Red Sox. Always Red Sox.
Red Sox are good luck. Is that a thing I've just made up, or does that exist?
I don't know. You can go with that if you like.
I didn't know that.
I've worn Red Sox since school. Yeah. Oh. I used to get detention for my Red Sox.
You get detention and still wear them?
Still wear them.
Wow.
Yeah.
Keep the Red Sox flying,
yeah,
wearing.
Something like that, yeah.
So, Keith, I've just logged into your Amazon account.
Yes.
We've never met before. How do you feel about the fact the random man...
it's a bit strange, yeah. But it's okay. Yeah, it's all good.
Have you ever taken a moment to look back at your Amazon account, see your Amazon past?
I can't say I have, no.
Well, that's really good, because some people come into this and they...
So this is like a therapy session for me.
Yes. We're on the Amazon retail therapy couch. We're going right back then to the first thing you ever bought on Amazon. And
yeah, go on. Hit it. Hit me.
It's good.
What is it? What did I buy?
15th of October 2012. Right? That's the earliest we've got here.
Yeah. Okay.
£386.
Blimey.
Punchy.
Was it?
Bit trumpy, that.
Yeah.
The Optima HD 600 XLV widescreen projector.
That's right. I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I just left my wife. I bought the projector for entertaining in the studio, in my pottery studio.
Right.
Because we have a massive projector in the studio and a big screen, don't we, Marge? And yeah, we watch stuff on that.
Amazing.
Yeah, it's huge. What's so wonderful about having a projector like that is that you'll watch something with friends or whatever. We'll watch the Throwdown or something with friends. Mm. And then you'll have a few drinks and this, that and the other. And then someone will start talking about something and you'll go, oh, I'll just get it up on YouTube. and we get it up on YouTube, and you go, yeah, no, that's the bloke, and there you'll see something there, and you can literally do anything from the projector because it's all PC connected.
That is,
it's great,
such a good idea. Yeah. Why aren't there more? And this sounds a bit naff, like a YouTube party, where, because the number of times, like you say, you're sitting and chatting and someone says, have you seen that clip?
Yeah.
And you all gather around someone's phone.
Yeah. No.
And usually there's WhatsApp messages coming in across the top.
Exactly. Yeah.
And you're just like, sorry, mate, ignore her. To be able to sit there and go, all right, let's have a look. And then.
I know. Yeah. Like a sort of a wonderful music video that you saw once, or you were at Glastonbury and, you know, Primal Scream were playing or whatever.
Yeah.
And let's get it up. And it's quite nice.
I like this. I like the idea of you rewarding yourself with a party in the, not the showroom, in the studio.
Yeah. So basically my studio is an old bakery. Actually, it's about 200 years old.
Okay.
This is the one in Whitstable. Yeah. And downstairs is clay, and upstairs is computers and projector. Oh. So, and may the two never meet, because clay and computers...
They're not going to get on.
Don't really mix.
Yeah.
So that's how it works. And, I've been there for, 17, 18 years now.
Okay.
And it's great, yeah.
So we find you here. This is 2012 when you've bought the projector. Give us a bit of a backstory. By 2012, you've been there for a few years. How long had the pottery thing been happening? When did that all begin? Because you've got a fairly coloured history, right? You've got rock bands. It's not just Red Sox.
That's not just Red Sox. No. So, I mean, I left school at the age of 18 after A levels.
Yeah.
Why, I don't know why I did them.
Yeah.
I just did it just to do A level pottery at school.
Uh-huh.
Obviously, I think I was the only one in the borough of Barnet doing A-level pottery.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, yeah. So I did A-level pottery, and then I was going to go on to further education, either Harrow, because they had an amazing pottery course at the time, or Camberwell, because, again, they had an amazing...
That's a good art school there as well, isn't it?
Yeah, Camberwell. Very good art school, yeah. But I really didn't want further education. I hated school. And so I got a job as a clay boy instead.
What is a clay boy?
A clay boy is someone... That. Yeah, it's not rude.
okay, fine. Yeah.
But no, it's shoveling clay, sweeping the floor, preparing clay for two potters in my experience. I worked at a pottery just outside Watford called Harefield Pottery, right on the canal where no one can hear you scream.
Sure.
Yeah, it was a bit like that. It was the 80s. So I've been doing pottery ever since, a professional pottery since 1983.
Right.
So a long time.
That's quite a thing to throw yourself into, like the pottery thing, to go, no, I'm putting aside all formal education, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah,
were your family like, I don't know what he's doing, he's just into pot. Like, you know what I mean? Did it feel brave, or was it like, I've got no choice?
I think they were quite relieved that I was into something, anything that I had a passion for.
Yeah.
And I had a passion for pottery. Like, I mean, when I first touched a piece of clay at the age of 11 in the first year of school, it literally was like a religious calling. It was like a revelation. I just knew that this material was going to be in my life for the rest of it.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, it was like, dun-ding, the light went on.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
To think you then had to go and sit through geography and maths.
Well, yeah, no. Well, I used to bunk off school and go down to the V&A, to be honest. Yeah, what a doffo. Yeah. I used to bunk off school to go to a museum.
I would say that's the best place. If you're going to play truant, please don't, kids. The best place to go is a museum. Because any truant officer there, you'll be like, oh, school trip.
Really?
Yeah, school trip. That's fine.
It was brilliant. It was wonderful. And I used to go down in the sixth form, used to go in for registration, and then just piss off down to Kensington to the V&A.
I wonder when people will start to see the theme between people who have done really well and say that. Like, yeah, I didn't sit through school like everyone else did.
No, exactly.
But when are people going to start to go, do you know what? Maybe formal education is a bit too rigorous. It's a bit too much pressure.
Well, it's kind of box ticking. And I think, well, don't get me started, but I think
it's a podcast. I warn you started. This is exactly
that's why I think creative subjects in schools aren't really valued that much, because the powers that be can't tick the box. Because as we know, all creativity and, you know, art and so forth, it's subjective. Yeah. You know, and I think it's very, very hard for them to sort of justify the finance for it, which is really, really annoying, because people like me and half the population of kids, you know, are being sort of denied that opportunity to do something creative
and be fulfilled and have that purpose.
Yeah,
it's all switched off.
It's not all about maths, Rishi. It's not all about maths. Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, exactly.
By the time this podcast comes out, Rishi, he was the Prime Minister.
He'll be
until,
toast.
Until 2024.
Patreon.com/toasterpod. Patreon.com/toasterpod.
All right, then. It's my mate bought a toaster. I've got the brilliant Keith Bremer Jones with me. I'm looking at your.
What else have I bought? Oh, God.
There's just a lot. There's a lot to unpack here. 5th of December, you just go on a plug buying spree.
Oh, plugs, right.
Have you checked the electrics over there, mate? You've got you've got a one gang extension. It's not a nice phrase. X-Pro Euro European clamping fast on, fast off. You've got a fast on, fast. Why do plugs all sound so dodgy? You've got a Linde Euro to UK adapter plug. Another one gang 13A.
Wow.
Just a lot of plugs there. A
lot of plugs,
your
yeah.
studio.
Well, it might be because we were doing trade fairs. So I was buying the plugs for trade fairs at the time.
What, you're just on like, it. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Oh, I see, fine, yeah. Next case.
Yeah, we were doing about, oh God, 8 or 9 trade fairs a year. We were spending about $300,000 a year on trade fairs. Yeah, all over, Paris, London, right. Frankfurt, yeah, San Francisco, all over.
And so. What is the aim? This is a stupid question. When you're doing a trade fair, I know what the aim is, but like, what's the kind of optimum result that you sell the physical stuff, or they're like, we're going to do business with you in the future now? What are you selling? The actual
physical? Well, a bit of both, to be perfectly honest with you. I mean, but you know, you set out your stall and, you know, you take orders at the trade fairs, hopefully.
Yeah.
And also you create new relationships with retailers, you know, sometimes big, sometimes small.
I'm sort of imagining a village fair, but with a lot more jeopardy.
Yeah, a lot more jeopardy.
These are my livelihood.
The Frankfurt trade fair used to cost us $70,000. Yeah, for
Why?
5 days.
Why? What, for the stall, for the little bit?
Yeah, it was quite a big bit. It was about 100 square metres, our stand.
Oh, wow, okay.
It was quite big, yeah. So, yeah, they're a lot of money. So, you know, you need to have to claw back. There was this great guy that we knew. He runs a company called Coach House. Wonderful. Still going. Wonderful stuff. Amazing. But if it would cost him about $150,000 to do a trade fair, because his stand was huge.
Right.
And he used to sweat on the first day and say, if I don't fucking make a million on this day, we're fucked. And he was like that. And he was like that for the 5 days. It was like, why he didn't have a heart attack, I don't know. But he was literally, we've got to make $3.5 million by the end of it.
I just like the idea of people browsing his like trestle table.
Yeah.
Do you like it, mate?
Yeah,
do you fucking like it?
Do you want it? Buy it! Yeah, and it was amazing, yeah. But
Do all that stuff now? Have you?
No, so basically we've passed all that over to a distributor.
Oh, and they love a distributor.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
well,
yeah.
They have their own warehousing and all that kind of thing, and they sell the products. That's all the sort of KBJ... that's all the KBJ kind of production wear. That's all the stuff that's made in factories.
I see.
But what it's allowed me to do now, God, some 40 years on, is get back to what I was originally doing, which was being a potter. So I now hand make stuff, and that's what the new studio in Wales will be all about.
So, yes, you're moving to Wales, which, as a Welshman, good.
That'll need a lot of plugs as well.
Yeah, I mean, well, you've got plenty. You're gonna need a lot more one gang 13A extensions, let me tell you.
Yeah.
How often, I'm always fascinated by this, because you do have this incredible career. What's happened is brilliant. People love you. You know, you're on telly. You must be so busy. How often do you get a moment when you're not doing some stupid podcast in the basement? Do you get to sit down with a bit of clay and actually do what you love?
Well, it's really nice when I do.
Yeah.
And I do get a bit funny when I'm not touching clay.
What a sentence.
I get
clip that. That's our trail.
I do get a bit, I get a bit agitated. So, yeah, working in the studio is kind of essential. So
you should get some comfort clay in your pocket.
Well, that's exactly. Yeah, like worry beads.
Yeah. Worry clay.
It's like, so, which is what's lovely about now is that there's a bit of a, there's a bit of a period where I'm in the studio for a good month and a half before we start this tour that I'm going on.
Yes.
So I'll be able to sort of make some stuff in that period, which will be really lovely.
And do you have ideas before you get that time in the studio? Are you like, I really want to make a lovely bowl with a banana in it? That's what I can see.
We know where you're thinking. Yes.
Banana with two oranges. Or do you try and keep a blank slate when you sit down and you just try and see what
happens? No, I'm sort of... I'm a production thrower. So back in the day, when I wasn't mass producing work, I was hand making work in my studio in Highgate, because I'm obviously from London.
Yeah.
And I had a studio in Highgate for years before I moved to Whitstable. And I was hand making for the retail industry, people like Habitat, Conran,
right.
Heels up the road here, Laura Ashley, Monsoon. Yeah. And that was all handmade.
That's make loads.
So the largest order I ever did was for Habitat, and that was 16,000 pieces.
What?
So, but, by hand, yeah. So,
whose hand? Not just you?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. What? So I'd make anything between 600 and 800 mugs a day on the wheel. I know, man.
I'm sitting here sipping a tea, suddenly appreciating this. That's unbelievable.
So with that in mind, you over the years, you just become incredibly focused on doing stuff. Yeah. So at the moment, I'm making a load of mugs for the tour. So I can't make them quick enough, really, which is great.
When you do the tour,
yeah,
the merch stand, a lot of pressure on the merch stand. Now we know as well, especially when you're buying, there's bunting you bought here on the 7th of December. Oh. I'm expecting bunting. I'm expecting a lot of wires.
Yeah.
You've got trade fair experience. When you do the merch shot off the back of the tour, do you go and hang out there?
No.
You should. People don't do that enough.
No.
It'll cause mayhem, don't
do it. So basically, we have a lovely girl called Rose who go on the tour, and she sells all the merch.
Right.
And while I sit there and sign books or do whatever, or do selfies with people.
Yeah.
So, yeah, but it's all good. It's great.
Can you believe how this is, like, how loved you've become? I know that sounds like a really wanky question, but, like, just watching the show... And some people just have a thing on screen where you're just drawn to them and you like them, and it's like this in the flesh as well. I can tell you are that sort of person. What you see on TV is exactly what you're like.
Yeah.
Is it something you were desperately hungry for?
Not at all. Basically the tour is all about the algorithm of life. And, you know, I could ask you the same thing. You're sitting on this sofa with me, you know, doing Magic FM and all this kind of thing. Yeah. It's like, how does that happen? And it's these algorithms of life that we all have, and it's those sliding door moments where there's poignant moments in your life where opportunities come your way and you think, well, am I going to go through that door or that one? Mm. And that then enables you another whole load of possibilities. So it is strange. It's strange in the fact that I've become this judge on the TV, but it's all right. It's fine. It's fine. And I had a very, very good piece of advice when I first started doing the judging on the Throwdown. They sent me off to this wonderful guy called Ian Blanford and Bright Sparks TV. And he coaches presenters on telly. And
give me his email address.
Brilliant. Gary Lineker, he does all the whole lot of them.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a wonderful chap, and we're still friends to this day. And he said, whatever you want to do, Keith, you want to go on telly, and in your capacity, it's a bit like being in a pub and convincing someone to come home with you or to a party that sounds a bit strange. convincing someone.
I've got some lovely extensions. See my projector.
Come and see my plugs. And he said, that's what you want to be like. You want to be completely honest and completely open. And I don't really, that's how I've just given you my password to my Amazon account, for God's sake.
Yeah.
I really don't have many secrets. So,
well, no.
And you have to be, you just have to, be up front.
Yeah.
And the whole crying thing, the whole emotional thing was a surprise to me. I didn't realise I was going to be like that. And it was literally within the first 10 minutes of the first episode of the first series, I started blubbing at some woman who was finding it hard to get her stuff in the drying room. And I could hear in the earpiece the director going, my God, one of the judges is crying. This is TV gold. and ever since then, I haven't stopped crying. And I do get really emotional about what they make and the struggle that they go through. Because I can empathise with that.
But it's such a...
Yeah.
It's such an inner thing made outer. It's such a really weird sentence to say. But when you see these bits of pottery and stuff, and like, on other shows, if it's a cake or whatever, it gets eaten and it disappears. There's something about the poignancy of this object that's going to be there forever. I completely, the emotional thing, I completely get it. When I see you well up, I'm like, I'm on board. I mean, to be fair, I will well up at Gladiators. I'm ridiculous. Have you had that before? Is there other stuff you've done where you're like, oh God, I always go? Or was
literally flatline. No.
Amazing.
No, I literally, it's mostly pottery, isn't it, Marge? mostly.
Poor Marge in the corner. She's got the tissues ready in case. We'll just stay off Potter and you won't cry. What I love is the idea of people giving you gifts in real life and you just completely dry eyes.
Oh, yeah.
Keith, anything? No, nothing. He just doesn't care.
Yeah, yeah.
It's amazing. No. All right, 2012 done then. Let's move into 2013, Keith. 18 orders placed in 2013.
Oh, okay.
Okay, here we go. We can see... What can we see? Lovely compact tent. 23 quid on a tent.
What would that mean for? Oh, probably taking Ned somewhere.
Okay. Yeah. Camping, I'd imagine.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a classic.
I have a son that at the age of 11 said to me, when we were driving up to London, and I was travelling to China, and he said to me, you know, Dad, you know when we go up to London, you know I don't do anything less than 4-star. I nearly smashed his face in. Yeah.
I mean...
Yeah.
we would be going straight to the hostel if that happened, right? Here we go. Let's go and experience this.
Yeah.
This is your bench for the night. That's what a legend.
It was brilliant. Isn't it?
That's amazing. Yeah. So how old is he now then?
He's now 20, well, nearly 21. 21 in February, yeah.
Has he now experienced 3-star?
I hope so. Yeah. I really hope so. I hope he's had to sleep in the gutter. But no, he's up here. He's up here at university in London.
Oh, he's definitely experienced 2-star in that
case.
Well,
yeah. And he's now a professional piercer as well. He's a qualified piercer. Yeah.
Wow.
So he's going through university being, getting money from doing piercing.
Making holes in things.
Yeah, which is great, which is good. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. His clay is flesh, basically.
That's right.
Do you weep when you see the holes?
I think he's had quite a lot pierced himself. Yeah.
Right, okay.
Don't go there.
Yeah, okay, fine. No, good. we have got a travel adapter plug. And there must be a lot of travel involved.
Honestly, when we were setting up Make International, which was about 2005, with my business partner, I probably was going to China 8 or 9 times a year.
Wow.
Yeah, so it was a lot, yeah.
It is.
Yeah, it was amazing,
And for long chunks of time?
Yeah, sort of, 7 to 10 days at a time, quite amazing, really.
Yeah, it's full on.
But I know Hong Kong Airport like the back of my hand.
So you're a big man. Yeah. How do you find the flights?
It's not great.
I need to get my pilot's license. I think the only place I can fit on a plane is a cockpit.
Yeah, okay.
Also, I've got the authoritative posh voice. I can just, give it a bit of that and everyone's I reckon I could, with this voice, I could blag my way into the cockpit. Let me through. I find long-haul flights and I only a few times have managed to get extra leg room.
Yeah.
Horrible.
Yeah,
It puts me off the whole notion of travel.
I've only been once first class and it was a completely different experience. It was brilliant. It was amazing. You get a bed and everything.
It's ridiculous.
It's great. But I like the way Marge describes long-haul flights. It's films and snacks. Films and snacks.
It is.
That's all you need to think about. Films and snacks.
Also, I find on long-haul flights, everything they ask, you go, yeah.
Yeah.
Are you okay? Yeah. Do you want some snacks? Yeah. Do you want some wine? Yeah. Just basically get a sticker with on your forehead.
Just, and then you can just go to sleep and just pile it all up in front of you. Find us on Twitter and Instagram. At ToasterPod is the name we're trying to jam. It's simple like a sarnie filled with cheese and ham. At ToasterPod, at ToasterPod, at ToasterPod, I swear it's not a scam, I think.
So welcome back to part two of My Mate Bought a Toaster. I nearly forgot the name of the show then. In a second, Keith Brimer-Jones is going to be having that realisation that all our guests eventually have on the show.
This is like a bit of a survey of my retail habit. It's quite good, really.
That is still to come. But first, I've just got time to tell you about our pals at False Economy. It's a great podcast hosted by Vix Layton and Paul Watson. They have fabulous guests who talk about their retail quirks. And the guys also dig into various bits of retail news kicking around, including, last week, the sensational news that Woolworths might be coming back. Which makes me very excited. I can feel, I think, I don't know, My Mate Bought a Toaster, but Woolworths purchases only. That could happen. Anyway, go and check out False Economy with Vix Layton and Paul Watson. They're on Insta as well, False Economy Pods. That's False Economy Pod. There's a big double EE in the middle, which is upsetting. But apart from that, it's a great Insta handle. False Economy Pod with Vix Layton and Paul Watson. A great podcast to listen to, but obviously only after you've listened to this episode with Keith Brimer-Jones, which we're going to get back to now. Here we go. We've got other stuff here in 2013. In June, we've got a really useful storage box. Can you confirm it was really useful?
Oh, yes. I have loads of really useful storage boxes now.
Oh, do you?
Absolutely tons of them.
And are they, what's the word? Are they really useful?
They are. They're really plastic.
Yeah.
But they're sealed, so you can store stuff in them for... It's like a QVC advert.
Welcome to the show.
It's like, yeah. You literally... And we've got tons of them piled up in the chapel in Wales with all our stuff in them.
Right.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
You've bought a chapel
in
North Wales.
Yes.
Which is amazing.
Yes.
Are you going to be worshipping there, is my first question.
Well, I'll be worshipping clay there.
Good.
Absolutely.
They are excellent.
No, I will be, yeah.
No more false prophets. Let's worship clay. And the second question I've got, which pops into my head, is I just see boxes and boxes of really, the really useful boxes. How well labelled is everything? Because that just makes me start to panic, the idea of these boxes and you going,
you see,
there's a pot there somewhere that I want to...
Well, that is a bit of a problem, but I am quite anal at labelling. I'm pretty good at that.
Yeah.
And what I've done is... When we're packing stuff up in the studio in Whitstable, I haven't labelled it, itemised it with all the thing. I've just said the stuff left to the loading bay door, because then I can visualise what was there, because I've got quite a kind of photographic memory.
Yes.
So I can just go, stuff by the loading bay door. Oh, yeah, we used to have that there. Oh, it'll be in that box then.
So when you're doing like a new series of Throwdown or something and you've got to learn all the new people's names...
Yeah.
Do you know, visualise them in place. This is a good... The visualising is the best way into your memory.
Yeah, it is. Well, because I'm dyslexic. So so visualisation is quite a thing for me. When you're dyslexic, you have a much better affinity to shape, form and volume. Most architects are severe... Yes. Norman Foster, severely dyslexic.
Wow.
Yeah, but hey-ho, look what
he's done created. Okay.
He's done all right, I think. Yeah, I think he's done all right.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I kind of visualise things. And it's really strange because Marge will tell you this, but I'm hopeless with names. Literally hopeless with names.
Tom, it's fine.
Yeah, cheers.
Yeah. Me
and,
too, though. Yeah,
yeah and... But when I get on the Throwdown and I get all the biographies beforehand of the Potters... By the first step, I know every single name. I don't know why, but I just really get into it, and I know every single name. Yeah,
I get the feeling with that show, it's like all your experience, whether it's at trade fairs or starting businesses or stuff, or just the struggle in school or the pottery, all of that stuff. It feels like it comes into its own for that show.
Well, I think without sounding too like a sage, but I think we go through life and we pick up certain tricks and certain talents, and we bring those to whatever we find ourselves in.
We take
whatever
our
situation.
We take our really useful boxes wherever we go.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what you do.
That's a very good analogy.
Okay, 2014 now.
Yeah.
Keith Brummer Jones. Oh, look, there's a lot of purchases in 2014.
Oh, really?
60 purchases.
Oh, wow. Blimey.
It's enough, isn't it? It's enough. It's got to be something.
This is
good
quite
this.
Good, actually, because this is like a bit of a survey of my retail habits. It's quite good, really.
Well, we take an audit of your retail habits, but as a result of that, it's like the most honest diary you've ever kept. Because you've never thought some idiot would go through this.
No, that's right. So absolutely.
It's the real you.
It's the real me.
The knives, the guns, the hatred. No, what we see, the real you, Keith, is lots of, again, really useful storage boxes. You've treated yourself. You splashed out on four on the 10th of April.
No, yeah, because they're not cheap.
No, well, they're good boxes, though.
Yeah, they're good boxes.
You don't want to cut corners on certain things.
Storage. Don't cut corners on storage.
You don't want to get... I've done this in the past.
Yeah.
You get the cheap storage boxes, you put the lids on, the lids crack.
Yeah.
Especially with what you do with precious stuff in there.
You're right.
This is proper dad advice, this. When you're... I mean, this is what... Don't forget, this is a guy who does 600 mugs in a day by hand.
Yeah.
That's just... You must go to sleep at night. When you're doing that, still just seeing the mugs.
Well, there was for a time in the early 90s when I was throwing a lot, this arm, I had real problems because it literally was like that. It literally was stiff as anything.
Oh.
I couldn't relax it. And I tell this story on the tour, but you can see it there. That's my throwing knuckle, right?
Yeah.
Back in the day, I'd be washing my hands sometimes and I'd notice a white mark there. I think, oh, what that? And it would be the bone because I would have worn the skin away on my knuckle. It sounds more dramatic than it was because it didn't really hurt because it happened over time. But yeah you'd literally wear the skin away.
Because of the way your...
Yeah, because I kind of throw with the knuckle and you bring the clay up
and that
touches the wheel and it's like the clay. And,
right,
you wear it away. Yeah. So when I've got a little knot on my pointy finger,
yeah,
on my knuckle there, I know I've been throwing, so it's nice.
You don't see that with Patrick Swayze on Ghost, do you?
No, that's right.
You don't see that. 2014, elsewhere, oh, we've got some Birkenstock sandals.
Birkenstock sandals. That's good.
That's a real, for me, that's a real license to middle age when you get your Birkenstocks.
But they're a design classic, aren't they?
They are a classic.
Yeah.
I'm not criticising them. They're bloody nice and comfy.
Yeah.
But it's that moment of buying stuff like that and going, yeah, I'm really comfy being me. Oh, I'm nailing this. Treating myself. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like a little, it's like a little open top car for your feet.
Yeah. And I would buy Birkenstocks before I went to China, actually, because they were perfect to wear in China. Because when you go to visit a factory, you always take your shoes off when you go into the factory.
No way.
Yeah, there's always loads of shoes by the factory.
Okay.
And and obviously with Birkenstocks, you can just literally just take them off your feet and walk through the factory.
And how were the factories you went to see in China? Because we hear stories, you know, are they absolutely vast and mind-boggling?
Some of them are, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the ones we use are spotlessly clean. Fortunately for me, I mean, you see, this is the thing. People say, oh, why do you produce in China? This, that, the other. Well, China, it's the clue is in the name.
I mean,
China,
yeah,
as in China. Seriously.
Oh, yeah, China. Yeah, no, good. That's right. Makes sense.
That's it.
Yeah.
And they kind of invented the modern day production about 1,000 years before we were even doing ashtrays.
Mm-hmm.
And and the porcelain in China is arguably the best in the world.
Is that right?
It's incredible stuff.
Because of just inherited knowledge?
No, it's the mineral deposits that they have in China, which gives you a certain... It's called a hard-paste porcelain. I won't go into detail. But it means that you can once fire it. You don't have to biscuit fire it, and then you glaze it.
And that's just a resource. That's just a natural resource they've got.
It's a natural resource,
right,
and
okay.
It's just amazing. Yeah,
ah.
Yeah, it was amazing. Because I remember... at a trade fair, asking a factory owner from China, I said, so how much do you pay for your clay per ton? And I pay about £600 or £700 at the time for porcelain. It's expensive.
Yeah.
And he looked at me as if I was asking him, how much does it cost to breathe the air? He said, well, I just dig it out of the ground. And it was like, oh, okay.
Wow.
It's literally everywhere. And it's amazing stuff.
It's true, though, isn't it? We've become very used to, obviously, a lot of stuff is made in China and can be, you know, cheap and break easy. That is a cliche that some people lean on. But with this stuff,
no,
not valid.
They have a tremendous history of ceramics. Yeah. Some of the best in the world.
Yeah.
And, you know, people sort of forget that, you know, the Far East, that there is amazing, incredible stuff. Porcelain is actually... named from Marco Polo, named porcelain because it comes from a young suckling pig. The skin tone of a suckling porcelain, and that's where it comes from. Because he went over there, doing merchant trading in China, bringing it back to Europe, and he saw this amazing material which was called porcelain.
That's
where it comes from.
That's the fact of the show. Make sure you use that in conversation in the next 24 hours. That is your challenge. Record yourself telling someone that and send it into the show. That's absolutely outstanding. Of course, the word pork is in there.
Yeah,
yes.
Pork. Yeah, that's it.
Oh, look, we've got a leather gym skipping rope.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's when I was remotely interested in doing some exercise.
Mm.
Yeah. I think I've packed that away in a really useful box somewhere.
It's just, when you're, especially if you're physically up and about doing stuff with work anyway.
Yeah.
To then stop, when you're self-employed and, you know, you've got to make 600 things a day.
Yeah.
I'm going to take an hour off costing me X to skip.
Yeah.
people would walk in and think you were insane.
No, and it's funny. That's one, oddly enough, that's one of the things I'm really looking forward to getting into the studio in Wales, because I'll be doing a lot more hand making.
Yes.
And quite frankly, it's very, very physical.
Yeah.
And it's a bit like being on a building site.
Yeah.
And I kind of like, I've lost that physical stuff. Now I'm this tosser on the telly.
Again, use that for the clip.
Yeah, I don't do much physical stuff.
Yeah.
I'm going to love getting back into doing a bit more physical. So,
is it you by yourself? Or do you get assistants and stuff like that?
So back in the day when I was doing lots of stuff for the retail companies, handmade stuff, I'd have about 5 or 6 people working with me, but I was the only one throwing. So I'd literally get into the studio at about 5:30 in the morning.
Bloody hell.
There'd be a load of clay already prepared from the night before.
Yeah.
I'd start throwing. And so by the time everyone rocked up at about 8:30, 9:00, I'll have done 300 or 400 pots by then.
Wow.
And they literally used to do everything and feed me from the wheel. And I just used to bark orders. So they'd, someone would be packing a kiln, someone would be glazing, yeah. someone would be packing the stuff into boxes.
Yeah.
So yeah, I would literally...
Like, Clayboy!
Yeah, literally, I'd literally stayed on the wheel all day.
Wow.
Throwing pots.
Is there much chat and stuff, or are you just kind of in... Are you hyper-focusing?
I like it because I'm kind of in a zone and I just listen to the radio, actually. Radio's perfect, yeah. Magic FM, yeah, even.
It's the best medium. Radio's the best medium.
No, it is. It really is, yeah. For doing something like throwing on a wheel when it's repetitive stuff,
yeah.
Honestly, it's brilliant. Yeah. I love it. Absolutely.
Quite right, too.
Much better than telly.
Yes. Oh, who'd want to be on telly?
Yeah.
please, I'll do anything. So, 6th of May 2015, Black Sleep Sleeping Eye Mask. You've bought a blindfold. ATP.
Ah, that's right. You know why I bought that?
No.
For the blindfold challenge, to practice the blindfold challenge on the throwdown.
Oh,
yeah.
So are we doing the show by 2015 or not?
Almost just starting, the first series, yeah. And I piped up like an idiot and said, oh, I could throw something blindfold. They went, really? Could you do that? And I said, yeah, I could do that. And then, right, okay, we'll do that then.
So this is the moment you actually have to put your money where your mouth is.
Yeah,
spend ATP on a blindfold to see if it's actually possible.
Yeah, so I'd be down in the studio making something at blindfold, obviously.
Yeah.
Yeah, just to see if it could be done.
I love the idea of your Clayboys walking in. Keith, what are you up to? I'm on telly now, lads. Cheers.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah.
So. What was that like when the pottery throwdown sort of appeared on your radar? Because knowing TV stuff, it takes a while for it to get made. Was there a lot of to-ing and fro-ing?
Yeah, there was at the beginning. I mean, the whole thing came about because I did this stupid video online called Rolling Clay with Keith, mm-hmm. which is a spoof of Rolling in the Deep, Adele video. You've seen it.
Yeah, if you anyway, do Keith Bromer Jones, Adele pops up straight away.
Yeah.
I was like, God, is he her dad? Why is she? Oh, I see.
So the head honcho of Love saw that. Love Productions, who do the throwdown and they do the Bake Off and the Sewing Bee and so forth. He was in America at the time selling the Bake Off to American networks in America. And he saw that and he literally phoned me from a hotel room after he'd seen the video and said, do you want to be a judge on this new program I'm putting together?
I mean, how quickly do you say yes to that?
Well, at first I thought, well, because I'd been in a band in the 80s and it's like, you know, showbiz, telly, all that kind of thing. It can be quite sort of shallow.
And you're getting someone calling you from America. I'm going to make you a star. Like you're right to have that filter.
So I when he came back, I met up with him and we went out for a drink, actually round here somewhere in Soho. And I said, look, mate, I said, I don't want to do Crash TV. I don't want to do Britain's Got Talent or whatever. Mm. I don't want to set people up to fail.
Yeah.
And you can do that quite easily in pottery.
Yes.
You know, that's not my thing. And he convinced me over about four or five bottles of wine. He said, no, I really want to try and do a program that's light entertainment, but extols the virtues of the craft itself. And, well, lo and behold, here we are, Series 7. And we kind of... done that, which is great.
You definitely have. And it shows like that when they've got the warmth, you know, the human race. I think we've got quite low self-esteem as a race
because
of everything that happens and things going on. And when you see a show like that, you're like, oh, we can do good stuff. Nice things can happen.
Well, that's the thing. And I think at the beginning of the series, when we first started, they used to say to me, oh, you've got to be a bit harder. You've got to be, you know, this, that, and the other. I said, well, no, let's buck the trend. Because that's not what I'm always the glass is half full. Mm-hmm. And you know, you can critique someone in a positive way, you can get a roundabout way of saying that's shite, mate. but you can say it in a positive way and sort of move people on.
And do you think part of the reason you are so good at that and natural at that is because of, you talked about the dyslexia at school. Do you think you got such a hard time at school from things?
Absolutely.
And I
think that's why I tap into the emotional side, because I see them the other side of that judging bench and I know how hard it is for them to produce something and then to get judged for it at the end of it every week. And so I think there's a real empathy there for them. And when they tick all those boxes, it's bloody brilliant.
It's beautiful. It's a beautiful, beautiful thing. All right, look, here's what we're going to do. We've seen the blindfold. Well, that's what I came here. I came here for the blindfold. We've got the blindfold. We're done here. What I'm going to do, I'm going to jump into the most recent purchases.
Yeah,
all right, Keith?
Yeah.
I mean, I literally could talk to you all day, but we're going to have to begin
Yeah.
Instantly, I get distracted by what I'm looking at. It's a nightmare. So let's go to... I'm going to go to 2023. All right. That's what I'm going to do. And have a little browse through 2023. We've got a adjustable polka dot necktie. You've got a lovely little...
Oh, have I?
Little bow tie here.
Wow, what's
seven,
that for?
$7.99.
Oh, yeah, that was for Rose. I bought that for Rose on the throwdown.
Yeah, yeah,
because
yeah.
I buy them all a little gift at the end.
Yeah.
And that was, yeah, she just wears bow ties, so...
You got a bow tie?
Yeah.
Oh, that's sweet. I feel bad I said how much it was now. We'll take that out so she doesn't see it.
Yeah.
You only spent seven...
It was really expensive.
It was 78 quid. God, Keith, he's so nice. You wouldn't do that on bloody X Factor, would you, Cowell? Unbelievable. Also... Keith, we've bought a leather and latex fetish gimp mask t-shirt. It's fine, it's fine. T-shirt, t-shirt. Fine. How important has the word t-shirt been?
Oh, okay, great. Yeah, that would have been for a friend, I think.
Of course, for friends.
Just say that.
That's in-show code for move on. That's right, mate. No, it's fine, it's a t-shirt. Oh, look, a vintage retro folding adjustable bamboo wooden clothes era.
Oh, yeah.
Studio or life?
In the studio.
Okay, right.
In the studio, yeah.
Right.
All the old towels and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's just so many, I mean, plate spinning is a appropriate analogy. There's so much stuff going on. How do you must be incredibly stimulated by all these things happening. How do you tune all that out? I suppose you're going to say by throwing and getting on with making clay, but that ability to find something that gets rid of all that. There's so many things happening.
Yeah. It's quite hard to focus on one thing at a particular time.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's brilliant. I'm obviously, you know, I'm fortunate I have a brilliant partner who keeps me on the straight and narrow, mm-hmm. and she organises the diary. So it's really quite handy.
Oh,
but there is a lot going on, and again, it'll be nice to sort of get in one place up in Wales in the studio and really just start creating again in an old-fashioned way.
Think of that first moment you sit in the studio.
I'm a firm believer... I'll start crying now. But I'm a firm believer in visualising your destiny without getting a hippie nightmare. But I remember Dame Kelly Holmes talking about when she... started running.
Yeah.
And she said I imagine myself and I imagine that the ticker tape on my chest as I win the race. And I can feel it on my chest. And I can feel that ticker tape and I'm the first one there. And that has stayed with me. I can imagine myself leaning up against the door, a door frame, with a mug of tea in my hand. Just making my first batch of pots in the pottery in Wales, and that I have that in my head, and that's what you work towards. That's what you do.
Yeah, and we all do it.
Yeah.
And the problem is that life and things and stuff and demons change the channel, tune that out.
Yes. Yes. Absolutely.
And it's so important to remember the ticker tape on the chest.
Yeah.
Because it is. You're right. It's not hippy dippy to think like that because it changes your actions and it changes your microscopic things you do on a daily basis.
Yeah, yeah.
To make that thing happen.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, and you know, we talk about pottery and we talk about how, I mean, it lasts for millions of years because I don't know whether you know this, but ceramic pottery clay, when it's fired, when it's introduced to extreme heat, it changes its molecular structure. In other words, that sounds more grandiose than it is, but in other words, it's not reversible. Once you fire it, clay becomes from an organic material into pottery, ceramic. It's not cement, it's not rock, it's actually ceramic, which is a totally different thing entirely. Yeah. And that's why it lasts for thousands of years, because it won't break down.
Yeah.
And
it's magic. It's basically magic.
It is. It's alchemy. And that's what it was described as back in the 16th century.
Mm.
You know, people that worked in pottery were called alchemists because they were literally changing the molecular structure of a thing. And then don't get me started on glazes and pigments and oxides and how they change colour.
Yeah.
Again, it's all chemistry and physics. And it's wonderful.
And you're taking this stuff from the ground as well.
Yeah, that's it.
So caveman.
Yeah, but it is. Well, I'll tell you. So I was at a Humney Numney event, I think, at the British Museum some years ago now, bloody vol-au-vents and canapés and all this kind of thing. And I was talking to this wonderful curator at the British Museum, and he said, you do realise, Keith, there are only about five objects in the world that someone from 5,000 or 6,000 years ago would be able to recognise today. And one of them is a clay bowl. Wow. He said, if you gave someone a clay bowl from 5,000 years ago, they'd know exactly what it was. Wow. Give them a bloody fork, they wouldn't even know what it was for.
Yeah.
Or a knife, or even the bloody wheel, for God's sake.
Yeah.
But you gave them a clay bowl, they'd know exactly what it was for.
And that's so important to our caveman to last, isn't it? To do something on the wall that stays there forever, and yet nothing does. Like, even all the books, all the stuff we've done, it's going to evaporate. It will.
No, exactly. It is mind-blowing, really.
Keith, I think you're brilliant. Thank you so much for coming on My Mate Bought a Toaster. I'm going to now log out of your Amazon, by the way. Look, I'm pressing the magic flames button. There it goes. Goodbye, Keith Brammer Jones's.
I like the flames.
Amazon history.
That's very good.
It's good, isn't it? No expense spent on that free app. So, look, Keith, you've got a tour coming up.
It's called Life, Clay and Everything.
Great.
Which is kind of broad sort of title there.
Yeah.
We've got about 19 dates to do. Because we did a tour last year, 22-date tour last year. Okay. I say we. Marge is on stage with me, interviewing me.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So,
he's quite easy to interview, Marge, isn't he? He's all right. It's good. I've enjoyed this. just ask one question, then off he goes.
Yeah. And that went really, really well. So Fane, the company that put on the tour, they've asked us back to do more. So that's what we're doing.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
It's a trade fair. That's what it is. You're still doing the trade fair.
It's kind of.
Trade is media. All right, well, I'll see you at the merch store. Good luck with the tour. For more information about everything you're up to, you're on socials, aren't you?
Yes.
On Instagram, Keith Brammer Jones on Instagram. And good luck with the rest of the show. Is there more Throwdown, by the way, coming up? Are we allowed to know or not?
There will be another one. There will be another one, yeah. Okay. Yeah. I think they're probably, gathering victims as we speak.
Excellent. Yeah. Excellent. Yeah. All right, good. I would say I'd throw my hat in the ring, but I'd miss. Keith, thank you for coming on My Mate Bought a Toaster.
Cheers, lovey.
That was great. Oh, I love him so much, the wonderful Keith Brammer Jones. There's extra from that interview. I had to cut that down a lot. There's loads of extra bits and bobs. Over at patreon.com/toasterpod, you can find out what a terrible Nativity Play audience member Keith was.
And he'd usually be with a couple of friends and say, what did you think, Dad? And I said, well, it was bloody awful. It was torture. Absolutely. You can't sing. None of you can act. We're all standing there videoing you when you're forgetting your lines. Why the hell would I want to sit there for 2 hours watching you do a nativity play?
The secret's out. He's not that nice. Next week on the show, Catherine Bohart's going to be joining me. Find out what gets this reaction from Catherine. Things are escalating.
What am I doing with it?
Are you
building
stressed?
A wall? Did I buy a kilogram? God, I was deranged. That is genuinely a shock to me.
Yeah. That also is available in full right now at patreon.com/toasterpod for as little as, I think, £3 a month. I should really check this. You basically get access to everything. So do support the podcast if you can. patreon.com/toasterpod. And that's it for this week. Don't forget our fabulous competition. You can win a pair of Apple AirPods. All you got to do, well, it's all at the beginning of the episode, is follow those three accounts of Hot UK Deals, ToasterPod on TikTok and ToasterPod on Instagram. Follow those three accounts and we will pick one of you at random to win that prize. Find out the details at the beginning of the episode. Now, you may go about your business and I'll see you next week for the wonderful Catherine Bohart. All the best, kind regards. Thanks for coming. It's my mate. Whoa.